Excuse me, I caught a bad cough and going away slowly. It's the 24th, and chapter 10 assignment is due on the Tuesday, right?
That's the one.
Thursday. Yeah. Thursday, right? Thursday. Due this Thursday. And those are the bond calculations, which are exactly the same as the problems we had on the exam. We're going to continue with options today. Hopefully finish up options. Maybe get the futures, maybe not. And then we get margining and shorting, other things that I don't want you to do. But first, look at what happened to Netflix. Netflix got hammered. Look, it's down 13% today. What happened? Anybody see the news? The subscribers. They've lost more subscribers. So. Oh, well, Netflix. And look at Coca-Cola. We hung on to Coke. And how's Apple? Still doing pretty darn well. G, not bad. It's too late now, kind of, to sell, right? Sell Apple? Nothing to sell. Hang on to your winners. Okay. Anybody? Sandra here? Okay, good. All right, so let's get started. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? I'm running out of good jokes. I'm running out of... No, I don't have any good jokes. I'm just running out of jokes. Not really. I still have plenty of jokes. Did I tell you about the antennas? The two antennas that met on a rooftop and fell in love? Well, you know, it's a heartwarming story. They got married last weekend, and we went to the wedding. The ceremony was kind of boring, but the reception was brilliant. You see their antennas, right? So the reception. All right, so, stock options. So, let's continue with stock options. Now, we went through, you studied them, didn't you? That was a joke. Who wasn't here? You like that one?
Too fast.
Too fast?
Yeah.
They're antennas.
Antennas.
And they got married. And the antennas got married. The ceremony was kind of boring, but the reception was fabulous.
He got it.
Good. Glad to hear that. All right, so we, and you studied options, right?
Yeah.
Aren't you had yes. All weekend you studied options. So let's continue and take a look at some characteristics. And hopefully I've convinced you, before we even talk about why you might want to invest in options, to stay away from them. But we need to go through them. And we'll spend some time doing some problems that are very similar. Where are they? Where are the problems for options? I passed out the options worksheet, right? Because it's got the thing on the back, right? So we'll spend some time, because this is what you're up against if you're going to take the series 7. These are the kind of problems that drive people insane. So we'll get to those today. I gave it out last week. That's for her. Yeah. Okay, so exercise price, the strike price. That was the price we were using, $20. That's the price at which the option may be exercised. So we were using $20, but the stated price, anywhere from $2.50 upwards of hundreds of dollars. It used to be they were only sold in $2.50 increments up to $25, and then $5 increments between $25 and $200, and they wanted you to remember this on the Series 7, I don't know why, and then $10 increments, anything above $200, but the pricing is more flexible now, and you'll see some that sell in dollar increments. So, the expiration date is the date on which it expires. And we said on last Thursday that it's always the third Friday of the month. Every month, at the third Friday, that afternoon, is called the witching hour. because all these things are worked out. And the options that are worthless, well, they just expire, but options that are actually worth anything are unwound, and the transaction takes place. And as with stock options, there are also stock index options and stock index futures. We'll discuss futures in next chapter, or maybe today, next chapter. But when all three, stock options, stock index options, and stock futures expire on the same day, it's called the triple witching hour. And you watch the market at the last, well, for us it's 12 o'clock, around 11:30 in the morning, 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock. And it'll do strange things. It'll bounce back up and down as they're unwinding all these transactions. Now, the style. Somebody brought this up. It was Jorge. The exercise, the style. How can these things be exercised? Well, there are two main ones. The American options, which can be exercised at any time. You don't have to wait for the last day to actually unwind the transaction. If you want to buy the stock that you bought the option for, you can do it before the expiration date. If they're European, they can only be exercised at that day. Normally, if you wanted to take a profit from an option, you bought a call option, the stock zoomed up, would you wait until the expiration date? No, you could simply sell the option. You could resell the option. You don't have to hold on to it. It's a security. It's bought and sold. However, with an American-style option, if you really wanted the stock, you could exercise the option and buy or sell the stock before the expiration date. By the way, there are several other types of options with various provisions. And if you are so inclined, you can look up Jamaican options. They're my favorites. Jamaican. Check those out. Bizarre. Bizarre world. Now, we already took a look at some of the options on Thursday. It's called the options chain, that list of options. And we'll come back to it in a bit because we want to talk about in the money and out of the money. But the easiest way, you can click on this and then type in the symbol for the stock. The easiest way is look up the stock and then just, there's a link for options right on there. And that's called the option chain. Now, you all understand options, right?
Yep.
Nod your heads yes.
Yes.
I could buy a call option hoping that the stock price goes up. Or I could sell a call option, get the premium, and hope the stock price stays the same or goes down. Or I could buy a put option and hope that the price goes down. Or I could sell that put option, hope the price goes up or stays the same and take the premium. But we've discussed them as if they were traded like stocks. Well, they're very similar, but there's one major difference. Options are sold as contracts. So when you buy an option contract, you are not buying just a contract to buy 1 or 10 or 20 stocks. You're buying a contract to buy 100. Options always sell in round lots. Every contract is equal to 100 shares. So you remember we said the option cost $1 or $5? Remember the example we used was $1. It's actually $100 because you have to add 2 zeros because you're buying an option to control 100 shares. Are you with me? You understand? So everything you see, everything, or 4 cents or $20, whatever the cost of the option was, you have to add 2 zeros. And then every contract you buy, you multiply that by, you know, the number of contracts. So if we did buy one contract at $1, we have to pay $100 plus the commission. Don't forget the commission to the broker. So if the listed price is $5, then one contract will cost you $500, two contracts, $1,000. Does that make sense? You have to know that. If you don't, you're going to look silly when you talk to people about options, and they're going to say, where did you learn about options? That's going to make me look bad. The option premium is the actual price. We keep using the term price, but and that's what everybody else uses, but the technical term is the premium. That's the amount that the buyer pays to the seller. The quoted price for the option buyer pays to buy a listed put or call option. The seller, also called the writer, also called the maker, receives the premium and gets to keep that premium no matter what. They get to keep that premium. even if the option is not exercised. Did I mention that most options expire without being exercised? Did I mention that? I hope I did. I don't remember. Maybe I did. To make it more confusing, the term premium is also used in a more precise manner when valuing options, the time premium. So for this reason, myself included, most people refer to the price of the option instead of the premium of the option. Now, in the money and out of the money. Here, did we confuse you enough last Thursday? We did?
Not yet.
Not yet? Well, let's see if we can continue. A call option is in the money. I didn't come up with this name. It wasn't my idea. If what? The strike price is less than the market price. So we were using 20 bucks, now we're using 50. So let's say the strike price, the exercise price, the price that we can buy the stock for is 50 bucks. What if the market price is 54? Is that what I used, 54?
Yeah.
We can buy a stock for 50 bucks that's currently selling for 54. So we say we're in the money.
Dun, 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 dun. We're in the money.
And how far are we in the money? $4. Yes, this is called moneyness, if you can believe it or not. That's
what
it's called.
Are you really in the money to pay $5 a share for the stock option?
Well, you're right. Hang on a minute. Hang on, Matt. Hang on to that thought. We're going to discuss the fact that you have there's a break-even point. But the option itself is in the money, in that it has value of and above the exercise price, because you can actually buy this stock for 50 bucks and then turn around right now and sell it for 54. So we say it's $4 in the money. You got it? Make sense? Or go, no, Frank, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Yeah, okay. Were you here last Thursday? That's why you're completely lost, right? Because what's an option? Somebody tell them what an option is in 25 words or less. The ability to buy a stock at a certain price. So we bought the ability to buy a stock at 50 bucks, whatever stock it happens to be. And it's currently selling for 54. So we are $4 in the money. Now, what would happen if the market price were less? Where's I've been using another color. What would happen if the market price were $47? If the market price were 47 bucks, would we bother to exercise this option?
No,
because the stock is selling for 47. Why would we buy it for 50? So we say that this option, if the price were 47, was $3 out of the money. In the money, out the money.
This is blue.
Burgundy in the money. And what do you call it if the stock price is equal to the exercise price, if the market price were 50 bucks? At the money. I didn't come up with these names, folks, but you have to know them. If the stock price is the same as the exercise price, then we say it's at the money. Yes?
Yes.
No, because the price could zoom up to 100 bucks, right? And you can buy it for 50 bucks. See, you shouldn't have missed that Thursday. You're going to like this, because this is gambling, and you're going to like the options. Go back over and listen to it on the free. It's on the website, by the way. Perfect. Yeah, do that. Now, that's the call option. And, of course, what's going to happen when we go look at a put option? It's going to be everything in reverse, right? The put option is exactly the opposite. Because with a put option, what are we hoping the price is going to do? Go down. So if the stock price, again, the exercise price were 50 bucks, and the market price were, what did I put, 46? 46, that means we can sell a stock for 50 bucks. It's a put, so that's a sell. A buy, call is a buy. Option to buy, option to sell. We can sell a stock for 50 bucks. It's selling actually for 46. So we could put it to somebody for $4 more than what we can buy it for. So this would be $4 in the money And then, because it's a put option, out of the money would be the other way. If the price were 52, we would be $2 out of the money. Are you with me? You understand what's going on? Yeah? I'm going too fast.
What did we sell for $50?
We can sell it for $50.
$50.
No matter what happens to the price, if the price goes down to $20, we have that option. Until what happens?
If
the market price goes down, we can sell that stock at $50 until the option expires. So on the very last day, we better exercise that option, because if we don't exercise the option, we just lost that ability. Now, would we exercise the option if it were selling for 52? Why would we sell something for 50 that was selling for $52? That wouldn't make any sense. We'd sell for 52. So our option would, poof, expire. But if the stock were selling for 46, we're $4 in the money. It makes sense for us to exercise this option. We can sell a stock that's selling currently for 46. We can sell for 52. Yeah?
It's kind of like buying insurance on the price drop.
There's, in fact, you're ahead of us. Matt's always ahead of us here. Hang on to that. That's when there's a couple of scenarios where options actually make sense, and that's one of them. You're buying insurance, basically, and we'll see that. Hang on. Let's get through moneyness first. In the money, out of the money, or at the money? Now, let's get to your first comment you made. Theoretically, once you've hit the strike price, if it's a call, we're dealing with a call now, when you're below the strike price, you're out of the money with a call. As soon as you hit the strike price, you start making money, if you're the buyer of the option. If you're the sitting, now see, they're watching, playing games in their seats, and they don't do mother test, and they ask me, why am I going to do no bid? That's okay. If you buy a call and the stock price goes above the strike price, you start making money. And the seller, the writer, the maker starts losing money, right? Because they're going to have to buy that stock that's selling, you know, for $60. They're going to have to buy it for $50. I'm sorry, sell it for $50. And they're going to have to go out and buy it for 60 and sell it for 50. But, as Matt said, this doesn't take into account the fact that we had to buy the option. So say that option price were $10. Now, we've been using a dollar or $5, but options go up in price. So say it were $10. Right from the get-go, if we're the buyer, we're $10 down. We are $10 in the hole. The seller, the maker, the writer of the option gets $10 in their pocket. And no matter what happens, they get to keep that. So are you with me? You understand what's going on? So what's happening is before you can actually start making money, you have to cross what's called the break-even point. You have to cross the break-even point. So if that option we're selling for $10, the price of the stock has to go up to at least $6 before you've even broke even. And we haven't even discussed commissions. What do you think of that? Now, if you're the writer, you and the option selling for $10, you've got $10 in your pocket, multiply times 100, 1,000 basically. And it's not until you hit the stock goes up to the break-even point that you actually start losing. Once it passes that, you're starting to lose. And of course, when that's the call. When we look at the put, it's the mirror image. Right, everything's in the mirror. So the put is an option to sell. We want the price to go down. Once we hit the strike price, the exercise price, every dollar goes down. If we're the buyer, we're making money. If we're the seller, we're losing money. But again, this doesn't take into account the fact that there's a premium, a price that we have to pay. And right off the bat, the buyer is down $10. The price has to go down below the strike price, the amount of the price, the premium, till they finally break even. The writer of the option makes that $10 and doesn't start losing money until it falls that far.
so the buyer is aware of this graph.
I hope so. I hope so. So, you ready to do an options worksheet? Leslie, get your worksheet from last Thursday. Get your worksheet, Alexis. Somebody wake her up. Oh, I forgot to pass this around. Optionetics, folks. So timely. Optionetics is coming to San Diego.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. 2 hours. Darn, it's on a Tuesday.
How much do they want?
No, it's free. 2 hours free. Free seminar.
Yeah, but when they sign you up with...
No, no, it's free. Claim your free gift. Look, free gift. It's Tuesday.
Free like credits. Free reports.
Callaway, Carlsbad, San Diego, Hyatt Regency, La Jolla, and Hilton. I can't go to any of these.
Free food?
Probably not, but a free gift. So here you go, folks. You want to sign? No, it's like they want you to... They, on their website, it's $4,495. If you sign up there, it'll probably be $3,995. If you walk away, they're gonna ask you to put your data down. They'll say, ooh, for you, $34.95. It'll keep dropping $500. And then the day before, I'll get it to you for $3,000. So go right ahead. Okay, now, the time premium is the amount by which the option price exceeds the options in the money value. In general, the longer the time to expiration, the greater the size of the premium. We saw that last week. Options that are expiring, well, they expired last Friday, it was worth 4 cents. And if we go out 6 months, it goes up to $1.78. If the option is out of the money, then the entire price of the option is due to the time premium. In other words, an option that is in the money will probably sell for more than it is in the money. So say we have 4 months until the option expires. If it were $4 in the money, it'd probably sell for, $5 or $6 more than what's in the money because of the time remaining until the option date. If an option is out of the money, well, then all of its price is just due to the fact that there's enough time for the stock to jump above the strike price, or in the case of the put, below. Don't forget commissions! In the previous examples, we did not include the cost of the commission. A commission is charged whenever an option is bought or sold. Both the buyer and the seller pay a commission. You have an understand why brokers love options? They just love them. And a commission is charged when and if the buyer exercises the option and buys or sells the stock. Again, both the buyer and the seller pay a commission. When you include the commissions, it makes it that much harder to make money in options. But if you are a broker, you simply love to have your clients get hooked on options. Disclaimer, none of my clients buy and sell options. If they did, if they tried to, I would try to dissuade them from it. My friend who's an investor, considers himself he's given up on options. And I interviewed him on my website. I was actually doing one of the presentations when he walked in. And he's, what are you doing? I said, I'm almost done. I'm almost listening up.
Which recording?
The options. I was recording the options presentation. And he came, walked in as I was doing it. He said, what are you looking at me? I said, let's just listen. And then afterwards, I interviewed him. And then that was about a year ago, a year and a few months. And he hasn't done it anymore.
Yay.
Speculating. That's the fancy term for gambling. If you feel the market price of a particular stock is going to move up, if you anticipate a drop in price within the next 6 months, it is a highly risky, they call it investment strategy, cross out the word investment strategy, but it may be more suited for the more speculatively inclined. These are from the book, not this edition of the book, they took it out, but this is from one of the previous editions of that book that some of you bought. The flaw in these arguments is this. There has never been a successful method to predict stock prices in the short term. Never. The only company that did it, Long-Term Capital Management, ultimately failed miserably. You may feel or anticipate that the price will go up and down, but that doesn't mean it will. That doesn't mean it won't. You might be right, because there's only three choices, right? It'll go up, it'll go down, it'll stay the same. Probably won't stay the same. It is is not investing, it is gambling. Plus, you may be correct, you may be absolutely right that the stock price is going to zoom, but your option may expire before you're proven correct. So should you ever invest in options? Speculate in options? Gamble in options?
Only if you do.
I ain't doing it. Hedging. Here we get to another one of Matt's anticipatory comments. Hedging. Have you heard the word hedging?
Yes.
Yeah?
Hedging. We're selling mortgages.
Failed. Yeah, they want any kind of investment. Hang on a minute. A transaction or series of transactions made to reduce the risk of adverse price movements in an asset. You can think of hedging as insurance. And although insurance can be useful in some circumstances, it is not free. You pay for the insurance via the price of the option and the commissions. Investors can use hedging strategies when they are unsure of what a market will do. A perfect hedge reduces your risk to zero. But it really doesn't, because you have to pay the commission. Right? So there's no such thing as a perfect hedge, because you have to pay for it. It's not going to come out free. So here's an example. This is what Matt was explaining. You have 100 shares of Butterfly.com. You've heard of them, haven't you?
What's it?
Butterfly.com.
Butterfly? No.
No, you never heard of it? It's not a real company. You bought it for $10 5 months ago or whatever, right? And it zoomed up to 50. All right? Now, you're afraid the price will plummet.
Of course.
Right? Are you afraid?
What goes up must come down.
Not necessarily. Buy Procter & Gamble. No matter what happens, if you purchase a put at $50, right? Now, you own the shares, folks. You own the shares, and they're currently selling for $50. If you buy a put, you have the right to put the stock, and you've got the stock. Here, I got the 100 shares. I can sell those shares, my shares, to somebody at $50. You understand what's going on? So, you've bought insurance until the option expires. Because the option doesn't last forever, right? 3, 6, 9 months. So you had to pay for the option. You bought the put option. And if the price goes down, you're covered. If the price doesn't go down and you don't sell, you've got to go out and do it again. There's a name for this. It's called a protective put. Do you understand why it's a protective put? We own the shares. We own the 100 shares. And if we buy the put, that means that no matter what happens, as long as the option is still in force, we can sell those shares. Now, what if the price went up? Oh, well, we could sell it for higher than $50, right? If we want to sell. But if the price goes down, we're protected until the option expires, and then we got to do it again. Insurance is not free. Insurance companies are one of the most profitable. Question?
Why wouldn't you just sell them when they're $50 and pull out your money? Isn't it the exact same?
Well, it's not the same. If you sell them, they're gone. So if it goes up to 60...
But if you have a put and it goes up to 60, you only get 50 anyway, right?
No. You wouldn't exercise the put.
Oh.
If you had a put and it went to 60, you would just sell the shares and not exercise the put. Right. Using options as insurance is one way to keep your broker very happy. If you are so sure the stock will fall, why not just sell the darn thing? Well, think about it. If you sell it, you got to pay the commission to sell it, right? You lose the opportunity cost if it goes up, plus you got to pay taxes. So people might sell the put in December so that if they do sell the shares, they can actually sell them in January. You understand? They're going to sell it anyway, but if they sell it now in December, they got to pay the taxes now. If they wait until January 1st of the next year, they don't have to pay the taxes until next year. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm supposed to tell you this stuff. Yes?
Do you pay taxes on capital gains in your options?
No. Options are always treated as income because they are 3, 6, 9 months. So they are always treated as income in the year that you receive the premium. If you sell an option, you're going to get that premium in your pocket. That is always treated as income. If you're the buyer, that's part of your cost basis, and it goes to zero. You get to offset that, any gains you would get from another buy. But it's still, because it's short term, within a year, they're always considered as income. Answer your questions? Yeah. So no long term gains with options. Straddles. Oh boy. It gets better. The simultaneous purchase or sale of a put and a call on the same underlying financial asset. What? You're bullish and bearish at the same time? Yeah, in other words, here's a stock that's really volatile, up and down. So what you do is you buy a call and you buy a put, and no matter what happens, unless it happens to land on that stock price at the very last day, or the exercise day, you're going to make money. If the price is volatile either direction, up or down, you will make money, providing you pass the break-even point for both purchases plus the commissions. If the stock price is not volatile, you would be the seller. You'd be the writer, you'd be the maker, and hope that the price does not change greatly. Two commissions at the same time. Your broker's going to love you. You understand? You bought a call and you bought a put. So you hope it goes up or you hope it goes down. Here's an example. Butterfly.com. You heard of them, right? Butterfly.com. It's selling for $50, but the price is extremely volatile. So you purchase a call at 50, you purchase a put at 50. The price of the call option was $4, the price of the put option was $5. Now, no matter what happens, one of your options will be in the money unless it happens to land on $50 the day of the option expiration. But the call is going to cost you $4, the put's going to cost you $5, so the price has to move at least $9 either way before you break even. Do you understand? It's in gambling, we often call this doubling down. I've already lost, so why don't I just lose some more and hope that I might get back? And you got to pay the commissions. You what?
I love doubling down.
You love doubling down? How does it work out for you?
It works great.
It does?
Yeah.
And she's shaking her head no. I don't know. I don't even know what it means. Double down doesn't mean you've already lost and so you...
You just
match
the same thing you already have out there.
Yeah, so it's not losing?
No. Unless you lose.
Unless you lose. How often do you lose?
50-50.
Okay, so I don't know. Maybe it's not that. You pay two commissions for the straddle, one possibly for exercising the option. Brilliant strategy, huh? Wait, it gets better. This is called a spread. And you're supposed to know this for the Series 7. The simultaneous purchase and or sale of two or more options with different strike prices and or expiration dates. Example, butterfly.com is selling for $50. You buy a call at the strike price of $50. You sell a call at the strike price of $55. You pay for the call at $50. You can pay for the call at $55. The stock price rises, you'll make money. Not much. The pot, see, by buying the call at 50, you hope it goes over 50, but you sold the call at 55, which means if it goes over 55, it's going to be called away from you. So you're hoping that it goes up just a little bit. If it goes up a lot, oh well, you won't make as much. I don't like it either. I'm not telling you, you know, instruction about syphilis is not instruction to get syphilis. The possibilities are endless. Yes. The possibilities are endless, so are the commissions. Now, folks, if I ever begin trading options, which probably will never happen, it will be as the writer. Because think about it, folks. The writer, being the seller, the writer, the maker, allows you, an individual investor, to play the part of the casino. You become the Las Vegas casino, and the option buyers are betting against you. Right? Most options expire worthless. Have I mentioned that before? So no matter what happens, if you're the writer, you get to put that money in your pocket. The dollar, the $5 times 100, whatever the option premiums were, you get to keep that. That doesn't mean you're not going to lose at times. If the stock price zooms up, you're in trouble, right? You've got to go buy a stock at 54 or 64 and sell it at 50. Or you've got to sell a stock that's selling for $40, you have to sell it at $50. You understand? So you can lose if you're the option writer. But more often than not, the option seller, the option writer, the option maker wins. Now, we discussed covered calls and covered options last week. Remember those? Where the person wrote the call but had the stock. So that if it got called away from them, no problem. Here it is. That is far less dangerous than a naked call or a naked option, because if the stock price zooms to 100, they got to go out and buy it at 100 and sell it at 50. Yeah. The amount of return to the option writer is always limited to the amount of option premium received, but the loss can be substantial, even unlimited. In other words, if the stock price zoomed way high, in the case of a naked call or an uncovered call. And covered calls are the only transaction that is allowed in an IRA, the only option transaction. The only time you can put options into an IRA, into an individual retirement account, is through a covered call. So let's say you own a stock and you're thinking of selling, but you're not quite sure. You write a covered call and you receive the premium. If the stock price jumps substantially, the stock will be called away from you. You will be forced to sell. If the stock price stays the same or goes down, what's going to happen to the option? Poof! If you sold the call, right? You own the stock. You sold the call. If the stock price goes up, what's going to happen? Everyone wants to say it's going to be called away from you. Wait till I ask you. If the stock price goes up, what's going to happen? But you were thinking of selling anyway. So, okay, what's the big deal? If the stock price stays the same or goes down, what's going to happen to the option? If the stock price stays the same or goes down, you don't know what I'm talking about. But you're all being very polite. Thank you very much. If the stock price goes down, it's a call. It's an option to buy. It goes up, right? If it goes up, that means you make money. But if the stock price goes down, the option disappears, goes away. And then you can do it all over again. This strategy is only one of two option strategies I would personally ever consider. And in either case, you get to keep the premium. So, you own Butterfly.com. It's currently selling for $50 a share, right? You bought it at $40. And you're thinking of selling. So you write a covered call at $55. And you receive $500 from the premium, because the premium right now is selling for $5. Because remember, it's a 100 share increments. So the premium, the option is currently priced at $5. You have 100 shares. You're thinking of selling, because you think it's going to go down. So you write the call, you get $500 in your pocket. Now, if the stock price jumps over 55, what's going to happen to the stock? It's going to be called away from you. You're going to have to take those shares and sell them to the person who called them away from you. But you were thinking of selling at 50. So it's as if you actually sold at 60. They're going to buy it from you at 55. They've already paid you $5. Do you understand what's going on? So, what do you think of doing covered calls? Yeah?
I just have one question about it. When you make a covered call, why is it 55 if it's selling at 50?
No, well, it's selling at 50, but you go look up the option. The option at 55 is selling at $5. That's probably unrealistic. Maybe it'd be selling at $1 or something like that. I don't know. It depends on the stock. If it's really volatile, the more volatile stock is, the more the options cost. The less volatile, the less they cost. Because people are trying to make money off the volatility. If the stock price stays below $50, you can write another covered call. So this sub-strategy allows you to make extra money from a stock that you already own. Now, what are the disadvantages? You already own 100 shares. And you're thinking of what you're going to do with it. If you write a covered call, how about, hold it. He writes a covered call at 55 and the stock price goes up to 90. What happens? What does he have to do? He's got to sell them at 55. Is that typical, though? Does the stock price jump that high that quickly? It happens, but it's very, very rare. Now, what if the stock price plummets? He's still holding on to the stock. You understand? Oh, well. He was thinking of selling at 50, and it went down to 40 or 35. He could sell now because his option is not going to be exercised. You don't know what I'm talking about. That's all right. Let's keep going. Let's get through this. How about a naked put? How do you cover yourself in a put? You have the cash. And this is not allowed in an IRA. I think it should be, personally, if I were the king of the world, which I'm not. You are considering purchasing a stock, and you have the cash to make the transaction. So you're thinking of buying it anyway, and you got the money in your account. You write a naked put and receive the premium, whatever the premium is, $1, $3 times 100. If the stock price falls substantially, the stock will be put to you. You're going to have to purchase it, but you were thinking of doing it anyway. If the stock price stays the same or goes up, the option will expire worthless, and then you go out and write another naked put. In either case, if you're the option seller, the option writer, the option maker, the option premium, price of the option times 100, goes in your pocket. And this is the only other strategy that I would personally consider that doesn't make it right. You're considering purchasing Butterfly.com. It's currently selling for $50, and you have the cash. So you have $5,000, because it's 50 times 100 shares. You write a naked put at $45 and receive $300, because the cost of a $45 put is currently $3, to multiply by 100. So you told the world, hey world, I will buy it at $45. All right? Give me $3 for every 100 shares, so that's $300. If the stock price falls below $45, the stock will be put to you at $45. You'll have to buy it. But you've already received $3 for every 100, three times 100. So it's as if you bought it at $42. It went down below $45. You bought it at $45, but you already received $3, so you get the stock for basically $42. If the stock price stays the same or goes up, will the option be exercised? Poof, the option disappears. You do it again. Now, what's the disadvantage? What could happen? What could go wrong?
You lose your money.
Yeah, if the stock price went to 10, you're going to have to buy it at 45. But do stocks fall that far, that fast?
Not normally.
It happens, but not normally. Right. So this is another one. I haven't done it, and I probably never will. Okay? But if I were, this is what I would do. Okay. Time to do our worksheets. See if I know. I don't know why I'm doing this. Why am I putting you through this torture? Because you're here. That's what you get for showing up. You got your options worksheet? Now, how do I know that Bruno doesn't have it, right? You weren't here?
No.
Okay. Everybody else got theirs?
I know.
Okay. Where's your three? It's the end of the semester. Why am I asking you where your three-ring binders are? And your three-hole punch. And why? Oh, at least you quickly load up from our computer. Okay, so. Number one. Who wants to read number one? I'll read it. If you think that big and oily malted balls, candy, symbol bomb, is going to be the next big thing, the stock is currently selling for $29. That's the price of the stock. You purchase a call option contract to buy 100 shares at $30. So the market price is $29. The call option exercise price, or strike price, is $30. Okay, and you had to pay $2 for that option. So the option premium is $2. Now let's see if anybody besides Matt can figure this out, right? Is your option in the money, out the money, or out of the money?
Out of the money.
The market price is $29. The strike price is $30. We are $1 out of the money. Because would we buy a stock at $30 that we could buy at
$29? No.
No. So we're $1 out of the money. What is your break-even point for this option? 32? You're right. You're absolutely right. The price has to go above. She didn't trust herself here. The price has to go above the strike price by $2 before it actually starts making us any money, excluding commissions. Because we paid $2 for the option. When it hits 30, we're still down $2. Even though we can buy it at 30, even if it goes above 30, we're still down $2. So it has to go above the strike price by the premium price before we hit the break-even point. Now, ignoring commissions, what if the stock price rose to 36? I didn't have enough room here. What if the stock price rose to 36? What would be our profit?
$4.
Right. Not $6, but $4, because we had to pay $2 to get the option. So it would be $4 times 100 or $400. Are you with me? That's the kind of question you'll get on the Series 7. Now, we're going to do everything in reverse, right? Because we're going to do a put option. Put, I'm out of them. Oh well, who wants to read it now? I need now somebody to read it. Number two. Thank you. Thank you.
To ensure that the price of obedient test service is far too high, you think investors have bid up the price to an outrageous amount? About a month ago, you purchased the put option contract to sell 100 shares at $90. The price of the option is $90. The stock is earning some for 88 cents of all months.
Okay, so the market price is 88. This is an option. It's a put option. So it's an option to sell. All right, we get to sell the shares at 90. So the market price is 88. Is the option in the money, at the money, or out of the money? It's in the money because it's the opposite of what we did up here. It's an option to sell. So the market price is now 88. We can sell the stock at 90. So we're $2 in the money. Do you understand that? Do you see how it's the exact opposite of what we did up here? You see why these things can be so confusing? Because if it's a call, you go one way. If it's a put, you go the other way. Yeah?
Is that $3? Wouldn't it be $2?
$2.
$2.
I know, I can't draw. $2. All right, what's the next question? What? How much was the option? I forgot. Option was $3. Okay, so the $3 option premium. So we had to pay $3 for this option. So what happens? Where's the break-even point? 87. At 87, we will break even. Because we have to go below the strike price by the option premium before we actually start making money, excluding commissions. So the break-even point would be $3. I'm sorry, 87. $3 minus 90, or 87. And then ignoring commissions, if the stock price fell to 82, stock price fell to 82, so what's the difference between the strike price and the $8, but we had to pay $3, so profit would be 5 times 100 or $500. And this is what you're going to get on this Series 7. And then the others are very similar to that, but what is it, the straddle and the... Yeah, your broker calls you and says, you know, straddles are a great way for you to generate commissions. I mean, make money. And then the straddle is number 3, and then 4 and 5 are when you write an option. So it's the same idea. But let's forget it. Let's keep going. Because these are not going to be on the exam. I'm not going to ask you on the final how to do these, all right? Is that a deal? Yeah, I'm not going to ask you. But you understand that if you take the Series 7, this is what you got to be able to do. And they're not really that hard. What's hard is that they move exactly opposite of one another. They trick you. Oh boy, do they trick you. Oh boy, do they trick you. And so you really have to do them over and over and over again. Because people, what they'll do is they'll think, ah, I can finesse it. I can get it. No. Yeah, question? Roman question? That's all right. Is it?
No, I was just about the... Is it that hard when you're actually being like a broker?
No, I'm not sure I understand the question. Is it that hard if you're a broker? If you don't know these things, you're going to look really stupid. If you don't know these things and a client starts spouting things off to you, you're going to look really dumb. Because if you put in the wrong order, guess who has to pay for it? The brokerage firm. And guess who they're going to go after? Oof, they're going to give you a dope slap. So you know, he tells you to buy a put and you sold a put or something like that. You go, you have to know these things. I'm not sure I understood your question, but you have to understand options. You shouldn't use them. And that's my humble opinion. You shouldn't sell them to clients.
Maybe he was asking, what's up is it to be working in that field?
As a broker?
Yeah.
Well, it depends. In what respect? I'm not sure. With respect to options, if you want your clients to generate a lot of commissions, go ahead. Get them to sell and buy and sell options. I want nothing to do with it. But that's my personal opinion. Okay, now let's talk about ESOs. Do you remember the joke at the beginning of the presentation? The CEO said to the woman, "Reprice my options." This is what he was talking about. He was talking about ESOs, employee stock options. Employee stock options are options granted to an employee by a company, giving the employee the right to buy shares of stock in the company at a fixed price for a fixed time. They usually have some significant differences from normal call option contracts that are... They cannot be sold. You can't sell your options. You can cash them in to the company, but you can't turn around and sell them to somebody else. They usually expire in many years. So the options usually expire in 3, 6, 9 months. But these things expire for 7, don't expire for 7 or 10 years. And they usually have a vesting period, which means you have to be at the company for 3, 5, 7 years before you can actually use them. Understand? So what are they doing here? They're trying to give you something without giving you something. Because it doesn't cost them anything to give you employee stock options. There's something that later on down the line might cost them something, and they're just in the form of additional stock. So it just dilutes the company's stock. Unless they are required to exercise the options. I'm not sorry, expense the options, which we'll take a look at in the next slide. During the tech boom of the late 1990s, employee stock options were used extensively to attract employees to startup companies. Because here's the idea. We can get people, hey, we're a high-tech company. Our stock price is going to zoom up. So don't you want to work for us? We'll give you something that's currently worthless. Well, a lot of people did. And a lot of people got very, very rich. And others wound up with nothing. So it's very controversial. And you understand now why the CEO said, "Reprice my options?" Because what's going on? All his options are underwater. They're not worth anything. During the 2000 to 2000 bear market, the employee stock options were the subject of much controversy. There is still some fallout and publicity as companies and the Securities and Exchange Commission continue to wrangle over how and even if they should be used. Currently, companies can give employee stock options to their employees, and they don't have to pay anything. Doesn't reduce the company's earnings. Now, some companies, because of the bad publicity, have agreed to expense options, meaning they've agreed to say, okay, we're giving these many options to this employee. We will take this much dollars off of our earnings. But they didn't actually pay anything because you didn't give them anything that's any worth right now. Unfortunately, how do you come up with a price for something that is currently worthless? That's a tough job, isn't it? To make matters worse, while some people became fabulously wealthy through employee stock options during the internet mania, you might have heard of John Moores.
Yes.
Yeah, he just made out like a bandit. Many other people were soaked with crippling tax burdens on worthless pieces of paper when the companies collapsed. Huh? Doesn't make any sense. If the options expire worthless, how can you be taxed on them? Well, folks, the dreaded alternative minimum tax, have you heard of that? Maybe not, but most of us will never have to worry about it, so don't worry about it. But some people are going to have to worry about this. The AMT does not care if you never exercise the options. If the options become, now I'm not too keen on how it works, I'm not a CPA, but if the options become worth something, they become vested and they're worth something, you have to pay the taxes. Even if the company's stock plummets and you never exercise the options. If you're affected by the alternative minimum tax, which means you make at least $120,000, $150,000. You understand? Is that insane? That Alice in Wonderland, right? Wait a minute. Did you ask, how did you come up with a price for something that is currently worthless? Yes, that is correct. How do you come up with a price that is worthless? Because most employee stock options, when they give them to you, first of all, they can't be used for 3 or 5 years, and they're usually out of the money. They're below what the stock is worth. Since many employee stock options are out of the money, often by a large amount, or cannot be exercised for a long time, or both, how does the company put a price on it? The financial world currently uses a system called the Black-Scholes option pricing model. It may sound impressive, but it's really very silly in my humble opinion. That's the topic of Chapter 6. We're going to skip it if you don't mind. However, we may see a film that discusses how these things were used and in conjunction with a company called Long-Term Capital Management. Maybe not. I don't know. So here it is. Here's an example. The stock is currently selling for $7.50 a share. Now, you have employee stock options that have an exercise price of $10. So are they in the money or out of the money? Why would you buy something for $10 when it's currently selling for $7.50? You wouldn't do that, right? It's a call option, basically. Employee stock options are always options to buy. You hope the price goes up. Plus, the option cannot be exercised for 3 years. So the Black-Scholes model might say that the employee stock option is worth $250. Well, wait a minute. You can't sell it? You can't exercise it for 3 years? It's out of the money? How is it worth $2.50? The stock price might never go over $10. And this is what happened to a lot of internet companies. They were giving their employees incredible stock options. They never got a chance to exercise them because this was their ready to exercise them. The stock price plummeted. And they got hit by the AMT and paid taxes. I read one article of a guy. You ever hear WorldCom? It's gone. It used to be MCI, WorldCom. $60,000 tax bill. This guy thought his retirement was all set. He had options worth a couple $100,000. And before he got a chance to exercise them, the stock price plummeted when WorldCom was involved in financial picadillos. How would you like going from a couple $100,000 up to negative $60,000? Stock index options. A put or call option written on a specific stock market index. What? We've been talking about stock options on individual stocks. IBM or Microsoft, but they have options on the index, on the Standard & Poor's 500, or the MSCI Global, right, World Index. The stock index option allows an investor to purchase or sell an option that responds to the stock market as a whole. This allows you to hedge your portfolio by purchasing a put on the stock index option. So say you are a mutual fund manager or a portfolio manager, and you invest primarily in large cap United States based companies. Well, what's the benchmark for big companies in the United States? S&P 500. So you're worried about your price going down of your securities? You buy not an option on the individual stocks in the portfolio. You buy an option, in this case a put option, in case it goes down, on the entire S&P 500. So you understand? You're protecting your portfolio against a large drop. Because if your portfolio drops, the option's going to go up. So it hedges your portfolio. But It only works for a certain amount of time, and then what happens? It expires. And you can, there's so many darn indices. Whether speculating or hedging, it's still risky, it's still expensive. And there are interest rate options and currency options, and figure this one. I've never bothered to look into it, but there are options that last more than 9 months, and they're called LEAPS. You know they came up with the name before they came up with the what it meant. Let's see something that goes above a year, and we'll call it a LEAP, and then we'll come up with some name. Long-term equity anticipation securities. So they're really not options, because options are not allowed to go more than a year, but they're options. I don't know. You guys can look it up. Warrants. Almost last slide. Warrants. You know, not a warrant for arrest. These things were really popular in the 1960s. You still see them every once in a while. But these are long-lived options that give the holder the right to buy a stock in a company at a price specified in the warrant. They're usually issued by the company. So it's not really a contract between two individuals. If the stock has a new issuance of new stock, they need more cash, they'll sell more stock and they'll throw in the warrants as a sweetener, as a way to get people excited about buying the stock. They're usually accompanied bonds or stocks or compensation. Sometimes they're like employee stock options. Unlike options where each contract represents 100 shares of stock, one warrant represents the right to buy one share of stock, and they're always call options. The idea is that you want the stock to... You want to invest in this company, so you're going to buy their stock, or you're going to buy their bonds. Hey, we'll throw in some warrants. And if the stock price goes up, you do well. If not, oh well. Because they expire usually in 10 years or 12 years. It's not 3, 6, 9 months. So, final comments on options? Stay away from them, right? Yeah. The possibilities are endless, and so are the commissions. But wait, we heard about optionetics, right? I showed you about optionetics. Didn't I show it to you last week? Optionetics, $4,495. I showed it to you. Yeah. Okay. I will again if you want me to. It's here on the website. You don't remember that? Okay, let's go. No, I don't believe that. It's not a, no, I think that... Look, what they're doing is illegal anyway, so they don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't care. And so next week, Q Futures... Okay, so let's get out... Okay, where is it? Hang on a minute. Didn't I show you this? Two-day seminar? Yeah, I did. Yes, I want to learn optionetics trading strategies and learn how to become a successful options trader. I will receive 2 days of instruction. 2 days of instruction! You will make tons of money in 2 days! The Options Trading Library, 6 DVDs, Trading Essentials, Class Audio Online, and Special Attendee-Only Benefits for the price of only $4,495. Can you imagine spending that much in 2 days? You get optionetics trading strategies and the options trading library, 6 DVDs, Trading Essentials Class all day online, and special attendee only benefits.
Don't you forget half the stuff that you learned?
So well, ask for a refund.
I don't even know.
I know, folks. I've seen people do it. Well, I go to the seminar before and hold my sign up. It's options or gambling. I swear to you. I'm not going to do these because they're not good times.
You're dope.
What?
Dope.
I'm a dope?
No, you're dope. That means you're cool.
Okay. You're dope. I'm a dope too. Okay, on the back of your...
Are you?
Yeah. I love the one thing. You're so smart. How come you're not rich? You know, you're teaching this stuff. How come you're not rich? And I always say, I am. I got a wife and a kid and a bicycle. Like two cars. My wife and I have a car each. That's rich. On the... No, that's the wrong one. On the back of the stock options is futures. Futures. Now let's get started on futures. This won't take long. Yeah, exactly. You know, everything's relative. If you compare yourself against Donald Trump, well then, yeah, you know. What's his name? Bump. Yeah, okay. There are two times, I mean, Mark Twain, he knew. He knew because he was one of them. He was one of the goofballs that lost a fortune speculating in really wild inventions that never made any money. There are two times in a man's life when he should not speculate. When he can't afford it, and when he can. Are you with me? In other words, stay away.
That applies
to Las Vegas, lottery tickets, stock options, and futures. What are futures? Now, folks, futures are even more potentially dangerous than options. With options, you just lose all your money if you're the buyer of the option. With futures, you can lose a lot of money really quickly. But unlike options, these things actually have an economic benefit. They are useful, especially in our, you know, modern technologically based society. Futures contracts are commitments to deliver a certain amount of some specified item at some specified date in the future. A buyer and a seller specify a commodity or financial instrument to be delivered and paid when the contract matures. So remember the strike price? We call this the futures price. And that's guaranteed by the contract. Futures started with commodities, sometimes called hard assets, real assets, wheat, soybeans, cattle, pork bellies, gold, oil. And then they've moved now to the financial world. So here's the rationale. If it doesn't make sense, raise your hand. I know you didn't understand me when I was talking about options, but now you've got to understand me now. Because this is important, because you're going to have situations where people are going to say, how come the price of oil went down, the barrel of oil went down, and the gas is still $4 a gallon? Because it's the future. It's not now. Producers of commodities use futures contracts extensively. So let's say you're a farmer, right? It's April. What do you do in April?
Selling.
That's right. Not yet. No, it's April. And I'm not a farmer. So you plant, right? You plant your corn. So listen, the wheat. So this is a guy in Iowa. He's a farmer. And he plants 1,000 acres of wheat. Right? Maybe that's where we got, you know, tractors and stuff. He knows that if all goes well, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, come September, he's going to have 500,000 bushels of wheat. Right? I don't know. Maybe it's wrong. I don't know. I'm not a farmer. I don't know how many acres it creates this many bushels. But let's say that's what's going to happen. What? I don't know. So anyway, he goes on, he calls his broker, he goes online, and he sees that September wheat futures are currently selling today in April for $6 per bushel. You understand? Mm-hmm. He looks on the computer and sees that right now he can sell his wheat to be delivered in September at $6 a bushel. This is the problem with farming, isn't it? Anybody from a farming state? Yeah.
This is, my friends are from Mexico, their family, so I go visit and I don't help
her. Yeah. You're a farmer, and the sun is shining just at the right place, the locusts don't come, the rain comes at the right time, you have a bumper crop, what happens to the price? It plummets. Because everybody had a bumper crop. And so now the world is awash in wheat or oranges or cotton, and now you got all this wheat and you can't sell it for a price to make a profit. What happens if the sun comes at the wrong time, the locust comes, the rain, the tornado comes, and it happens to your crop? What happens to the price? You don't want to be a farmer, folks. It's very frustrating. It's very, very frustrating. It's one of the most frustrating things in the world. Everybody does well, and the price Everybody does poorly, the price goes up, you don't have any wheat to sell. That's why the government often steps in, because they got to work this stuff out, because we need food. The farmer can sell his wheat via a wheat futures contract while it's still in the ground. He can guarantee a price he is happy with and will result in a profit. The contract states he will deliver the wheat in September and receive $6 per bushel, no matter what happens to wheat prices. So what is he doing? He's locking in the price. You understand?
Well, so if he locks in the price but can't deliver,
then that's when the government steps in. That's when there's all kinds of, you know, farm problems. Yeah, exactly. Because that happens. That happens. Now, who needs 500,000 bushels of wheat?
Kellogg's.
Post cereal. General Mills. So consumers of commodities also use them. But on the other side. You understand? Kellogg's, General Mills, Post cereal need tons and tons of wheat and soybeans and rice each year and corn to make cereal and other foodstuffs. So via futures contracts, in April, they can purchase the wheat to be delivered in September and pay $6 per bushel no matter what happens to wheat prices. So what are the disadvantages and what are the advantages? Yeah, for the farmer, if the price goes up, oh well, he's still got to sell it at $6. For the food manufacturer, the Kellogg's, if the price goes down, no, they got to pay $6. So the farmer is protecting himself against prices plummeting, and the food manufacturers are protecting themselves against prices going up. You with me, understand? They are what we call hedging their bet. They're hedging. Yes? That's when the government comes in. That's when we, you know, work things out, and that's why there's food co-ops. What? Subsidy? Well, that's got a loaded word, connotation.
It's money,
and that's why, because we want people to eat. And this same thing happens in the oil business, folks. So when you hear that oil is selling for $100 a barrel, is that what it's selling for right now? That's typically, they quote the 3-month price. So when they're, and there are, you can, 6 months, 9 months, but when you hear today oil went up to $102 a barrel, what that means is crude oil to be delivered 3 months from now is currently selling for $102. So say the price plummets to $70. It's going to take 3 months for that oil to get to the refinery. And then it's going to take 6-8 weeks to be refined and get to the gas station. So you see the price plummet, or you hear the price plummet on the news, but do you see the gas go down? No. Or likewise, when the price goes up, gas is still selling for $3.20. What's going on here? Understand? That's why they're called futures. Because they're buying and selling the future. Are you with me?
When you're buying and selling that future, it's all speculation, right?
No! No, it's not speculation if you're a producer. Because you have the goods. And if you're a consumer, it's not speculation because you consume. You need the goods. So if you're this oil producer, you're going to, you know, eventually have that stuff. And if you're Southwest Airlines or FedEx and you need that oil, you understand? You're not speculating. You're hedging.
But I keep hearing in the news, like, if the United States hits Iran, the price of oil will go up.
You better believe it will. Why? Because there'll be less... less oil, there'll be less supply. And what happens if the demand stays the same and the supply goes down, you economists, the price goes up. Plus, we're not going to get to it today, but speculators get in. See, these people are not speculators. We'll talk about the speculators on Thursday. But futures contracts allow producers and consumers of commodities to hedge, taking a futures position opposite to an existing position in the underlying commodity or financial instrument. Hedge your bet. Have you heard this term? The farmer is protecting himself from wheat prices falling. The cereal companies are protecting themselves from wheat prices rising. And we'll review this and continue and finish up. This is not that much more. But that's the basic idea for futures. And they really do have a valid usage in the world. All right, you don't think so?
No, I'm thinking of something wild.
Wild and fun. Anyway, Thursday. See you on Thursday, folks.
All right.
So what is it, wild and crazy?
Yeah.